Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. And I should be saying Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. We're in the octave of the Christmas feast for us Catholics. On the big ones, we do it for 8 days. So this is still Christmas Day, just like the 8 days after Easter are still Easter. And it used to be the 8 days after Pentecost. I don't think we still do that one, but there's something else that we do the 8 days on. In any case, it's Christmas and Merry Christmas. And I dressed for Christmas for the show. I thought that we all agreed we were dressing for Christmas. But maybe I'm the only one who got the memo. We have two very, very fine guests. And we're going to do a little bit of a year in review and have some great conversation about what the state of the world is at the moment. We love to do these shows at the end of the year. And we do a survey. We do a Catholic Answers survey at the end of the year where we ask people questions like, what's the positive trend of the year, the negative trend of the year, the Catholic person of the year, the pro-life person of the year? So we reveal the results of that over 2 days. We also asked the Catholic Media Organization of the Year, and there is a correct answer to that. And a lot of people did not say the correct answer this year. So we're going to have a problem with that. But let me introduce our two very, very fine guests, not dressed in Christmas garb, but dressed very handsomely. First, I guess I'll go farthest away to closest. So Tim Ryland, who is the editor of Catholic Answers magazine, beautifully redone magazine this year. We'll talk a bit about that. Hi, Tim.
Okay. How are you doing, Si?
I'm very well. Is Tim's microphone on? We good?
Sort of, kind of.
There we go. Now you're on.
Now I'm in the conversation.
Yeah. We had to. The video guys did a nice job setting us up in a comfy little Christmas setting here. So. I know those that we got the modern chairs. We got everything for you, Tim. So and also with us, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers, a brilliant year and particularly in March for books being published here at Catholic Answers, Todd Agliolaro. Merry Christmas.
I want it to be known I'm wearing a sweater vest, Si.
Yeah.
That is very Christmassy. You're right. Yeah. I apologize.
Yeah, I'd have to be the odd man out here. You two do look a little Christmassy.
Thank you. Thank
yeah.
you.
Right. And I kind of have a little bit of the Santa beard and the belly. And all of
the
that.
Beer. Just stop at the beer.
Right. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen, both for being here with us. We've done this before, and we'll get your comments on some of the results of our Catholic Answers survey, which was, I think, to me, it looks like, Darren, I'll have to ask you this, but it looks like the least conclusive survey we've ever done. Always before, it seemed like each category had a really clear winner, and not so much this year. So maybe that says something about the year. It was a bit of a diffuse year. A lot of different things going on. Chaotic, maybe, is. Would you agree with that, or is that too harsh a word? We're living in chaos, it feels like.
Yeah, we could say that almost the end of every year, can't we? It's
well, I guess so, yeah.
I think it comes with being middle aged, too. Or the world
just these
to
darn
heck.
Kids
yeah, that's right.
And their chaos. How'd you find the year, Tim?
Chaotic.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I did notice looking over the survey and the individual answers, there's just such a wide range, especially when it came to the negative stuff that, you know, you could choose almost any one of 20 topics. It's just,
I'm not going to say who it is. There is one very popular Catholic person. We'll get to who that person is, but there is one handsome fella that everybody likes.
Yeah.
A priest.
Yeah.
Does he have a beard? Is he dressed? Oh, a priest.
Is he resurrected? Okay, I'm just.
But the magazine, you changed it this year. So before we go on, I'd like to talk about the magazine.
Okay.
It's a beautiful magazine. It's been brilliant for years, but you're doing new things with it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Si. I need you to talk to the people that write my paycheck a little bit more often. we have gone through a redesign. It had been a decade. And the magazine's been in existence for over three decades. So it was time to freshen it up a bit. And also, as you know, the way of all flesh, publications in general, print publications have been going away.
Yeah.
It's just not cost effective anymore. And our subscription base has been dwindling slowly but surely.
Right.
And in an effort to try to reach more people, to do a little bit more apostolic good, after much thought and prayer, we came up with a new paradigm, which is not subscription-based anymore. It's basically, if you're a supporter of our apostolate and you want the magazine, you'll get
it. You get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so it's
great.
It's just that simple. And we went through, I have a copy here. I don't know if you're going to see this. But
yeah, it's on the screen. Yeah.
Okay.
People can see that. Yeah.
Anyway, this is our first redesigned issue. I'm proud of it. I think it's more accessible than it. We did get a lot of comments about some of the articles were a little bit meaty. Yeah. So without dumbing it down, we're trying to make it more accessible. We've in the first two issues have addressed some cultural issues and that we haven't before in a long time. And things like, is taking marijuana immoral?
Yeah. So that's not what you would usually think of as a straight apologetics question.
Sure, right.
And it's, maybe tell us what, like, we're an apologetics apostolate at our core.
Of course.
So what does that mean? Like, we're moving into things, a broader kind of publishing than just hitting the apologetics things.
Well, what we're really doing, I think, is responding to what as an apostolate, the kinds of questions we're getting. Because I know that the apologists have told me, and I know on air, you get those types of questions. They may be edging into the pastoral field, but nevertheless, it's like what the church teaches about these particular things.
Yeah. I would argue it's apologetic. It's not 10 more reasons to we can prove the Immaculate Conception apologetics. It's not debating the Bible with Protestants apologetics. But it is. A question that's on people's minds, and the answer is connected with Catholic moral teaching, yeah. and which is itself connected with a Catholic anthropology that's rooted in natural law. So that's right in our wheelhouse, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a kind of use of philosophical categories and theology mm-hmm. to say this is what the church teaches. And the church, I suppose, I mean, with marijuana, to take an example, I guess this is where I'm maybe departed from the proper way of speaking about this, Todd, but the Immaculate Conception is a dogma of the church. So when you defend that apologetically, you have such a clear task. Whereas, can I use marijuana, or what are the proper uses of marijuana? Those questions, they involve the teachings of the church, but mm-hmm. there's not a defined dogma there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, there's concentric circles at the very center of which are Catholic dogmas, the essential teachings about our faith that are clearly defined and deeply rooted. But I think that those spirate out into other questions regarding Catholic doctrine, practice, prayer, and certainly morality. I mean, look, the old anti-Catholic fundamentalist crowd hasn't gone away. So there's still a need to provide defenses of the faith in conversations with such people. But really, in our age, the number one foe of the faith is the creeping secularization of the world.
Yeah.
And that expresses itself more on the moral front than on the the theological one.
Right, yeah. And did you feel like when you address a question like the marijuana question, what will come into answering that is a whole understanding of the human person?
Of course.
That maybe the reader of that, you know, like a parent, as a parent, I might put that in the hands of my, you know, adult children for their reflection.
Mm-hmm.
What I really want at the core level is for them to get the anthropology, for them to understand what is a human being, who is God, why those two things must be related to one another. Right. Is that your sense?
Well, you must have read the article. It very much...
I honestly can't remember if I read it or
no,
not.
No, you haven't, because it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, okay, all right.
It's in the next issue. But very much so, the anthropology is really what we come back to. And so the root question is, how do we as Catholics, or how should we as Catholics, view these, what you would call cultural issues?
Yeah.
Moral, but people don't think of, really, I think of these days of marijuana as being immoral. As it becomes more and more legal, that leg that we stood on for so long is like, well, don't smoke it because it's illegal. It's against the law. So you're sinning by breaking the law. That as that goes away, we have to come to a more fundamental, as you say, anthropological questions about why is it wrong to alter our consciousness? Is it, and why is it?
Right.
Given our sacredness as human beings, as created in God's image.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. So I imagine your field of topics then will proper use of media. You'll probably cover family issues. It's a wide open horizon.
We hope so. And we hope that it's much more usable and it's something that people will dig into and keep around and pass along.
Well, so but what about the when the you know the YouTuber, the as Todd was saying, say the Protestant fundamentalist YouTuber attacks Catholics for this or that. We'll still defend the church against these kinds of things, or are we?
Nah,
done
we're
it?
Done with
we're
that.
We're done with that. Yeah. All right, we're
we
done.
Won, si.
Yeah, we won.
We
won.
It's not a problem.
I don't think the internet knows that we won.
Well,
I don't think it's aware. All right, we got to take our quick break. It's Christmas time, and it's the last couple of days of the year. We always have these fun conversations. I look forward to them and value them, and they really are an opportunity to kind of reflect. And so I hope that you'll stay with us and enjoy that. We'll continue our conversation. We'll talk about some of the things that happened this year. We'll talk about our survey a bit. We'll talk more about some of the internal things going on here at Catholic Answers as a response to all that stuff going on out there in the world. We continue with our Merry Christmas week here on Catholic Answers right after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN offers the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass live every morning at 8 Eastern and provides you with daily readings to follow along and enrich your experience. To be sure you don't miss out on the daily Mass or to get access to previous recordings, we can send a link to your email inbox every day. It's easy. Visit EWTN.com and click subscribe. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Merry Christmas to you and all of yours. Hope you're getting a little bit of rest this week. Not everybody is. I realize that, but I hope that you are or will get some rest. And as we rest, it's a time to have some more relaxed conversations, not move at quite the pace we usually move on the live program where take a question, answer the question, take another question. We can get a little bit off of that Amazon warehouse mode of Catholic evangelization and have some conversations with people we really like talking to. And Tim Ryland, the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, and Todd Aglialoro, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers, are two of those people we love to have those conversations with. So what else about the magazine? Anything else you want to tell us about the magazine? I mean, the main thing is, if you're giving to Catholic Answers, you can have it if you want it. And so you can read all these great new articles that are going to be in there.
That's right, and I would encourage everyone to do that. we're already going out to 30,000 people, so you'll have a lot of company if you start reading the magazine. And I have heard from people that I don't normally hear from that are real pleased with the change. So
let me add something to what Tim said about who's going to get it. He mentioned supporters, so all of our supporters and friends, a large number of seminarians will continue to receive it. And literally anybody who asks for it. So you don't have to be a supporter in the sense of writing us a check. You want the magazine, call us and we will send it to you. That's the plan.
Yeah, I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That's really good news. Because I know one of the great things, and I've actually heard, I probably should have shared this with you more, but we hear from priests who say, I got it when I was in the seminary and it's made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But you've always done that, sent it free to priests, or men in formation.
Yes.
Both the seminarians who have received it for, many, many years, and now this new venture of sending it to anyone who wants it are possible because of the extreme generosity of supporters that we do have. So I would like to thank them as well.
Beautiful. Fantastic.
And also encourage you to become a supporter if you get the magazine and you like it. Yes. There's a QR code in it. You can scan and give us a buck, give us $5, give us $10, whatever you can afford.
We have an upward limit at Catholic Answers Focus of $5 million. Do you have an upper limit?
Secret Santa did the same thing this year. It was crazy. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It was really embarrassing.
Oh, that's very helpful. I think up to 5 million. I really don't think more than 5 million. But I think that's gauche. Then you're just.
Well, I believe we have a matching grant.
Do we really?
For the 5 million, yeah. No, of course we don't.
Oh, my goodness. I was like, wait a second. What? All right. I wanted to jump on that. Publishing in general continued this year. And what are the what's new in the publishing world? I mean, I know we're doing a lot more. We're doing more audiobooks, which is everybody in the publishing world has to do that. But you're keeping up with, like, it seems like every few months there's like this is a great book coming out of Catholic Answers Press.
Well, thank you, Si. And certainly back in March, there was a great book
that was by a Catholic triumph. I think the word you're looking for is triumph.
Triumph, magnum opus of Cyril Kellett.
Yeah.
Well, we're a diverse apostolate that's multimedia, and publishing is part of that. I think we go for quality over quantity. We're we have kind of a niche in the Catholic marketing world, apologetics and evangelization. But to be sure, your book, A Teacher of Strange Things, is just one of the coolest popular Christologies I've ever read.
Nice.
It was an honor and a pleasure to edit it, and a breeze, let me add.
Look at how nice he is to me.
And, well, I want to get invited back next year, Si.
This is really nice.
Well, it was an honor and a pleasure to run a couple of excerpts in the magazine this year as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and thank you. And,
yeah.
And people said, I really enjoyed your article in the magazine, which is what people say. They don't just say, I read it. People always tell you.
Right.
But I was like, really? You enjoyed my article in the magazine?
Well, and I'll tell you why. That's not idle praise, Si. You had a way of and it's really hard to do because the Christian mystery is the most familiar story in history.
That's the problem, isn't it? Yeah.
And even those who are not part of, who are not worshiping in a Christian denomination or practicing or even believe, can't escape having that cultural accretion kind of built up in their heads. Yeah. You somehow found a way, almost Chestertonian way, of doing like a memory wipe on the reader and presenting the gospel fresh.
Oh, that's so very kind of you to say it. And I do, I'm so grateful for the apostolate for publishing it and inviting me to do it and all that. But it does seem to me that, you know, we've done the conference now on Jesus. The next year we'll be on Jesus again, you know, in the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. It's just another way of doing a Jesus conference. The more we do this apologetics and evangelization stuff, the more it's like, okay, how are we going to present Jesus? It's the key. I mean, it's the... I think I'm on solid theological ground. You are probably much more advanced than I am as theologians, but to say, present Jesus and get that right, and a lot of other stuff right, falls in
well,
place.
Well, I'm personally disappointed because we're Catholics, right? We're supposed to be doing more about Mary and worshiping statues and that sort of thing.
My next book is on worshiping statues, yes.
Why do we keep going back to Jesus all the time?
I know. Gary Machuda's book blew me away this year. Steve Weidenkopf's book blew me away this year. Now you're ending the year with The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Is this one after another?
Yeah, those were all three strong titles. Gary is a fantastic writer and also a radio personality, kind of like your opposite number.
We invite each other onto each other's shows.
That's nice. That's very courteous.
And the name of his book?
The name of his book is Revolt Against
Reality.
Revolt Against Reason is the homage. His book was an homage to Arnold Lund's book, Revolt Against Reason. My apologies.
Yeah, but a very fine book, Revolt Against Reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, really making... it's one of those books where I love a book where you're like, oh, you're making a connection. You kind of had some... like almost emotional need for this connection to get made. And you're like, oh, he made it. This is how this. I love that.
Does a great job connecting dots through history.
Yeah.
Showing patterns, patterns of individual sin and patterns of corporate ill in the world that all have common denominators that ultimately go back to the Garden of Eden and ultimately even before that probably to Lucifer's decision not to serve, right?
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
And Steve Weidenkopf's, I mean, we're so familiar with these books. Let's be sure and give the titles to people.
Oh, yeah.
Steve's is Light
Steve's book is called
Darkness.
Light from Darkness.
Yeah.
And that's probably my favorite after your sigh of 2021.
Yeah. After mine. Oh, thank you.
Steve is...
That's very nice.
Am I coming back next year? Can I stop doing that now?
You're in. You just keep... I like the trend. Yeah.
I can't give this book enough praise. Because it's so right for our times. It's been a trying few years in the world and in the church.
Right.
And it feels like we've been just battered from all directions. And we're tempted to say, and sometimes you see this kind of sentiment come across on social media, oh, the church has been through worse. Holy Spirit's in charge. all true, but it's got kind of an unsatisfying Pollyanna-ish superficiality to it.
Right.
What Steve does is go in depth on this point, and he looks at nine historical crises, really bad ones,
yeah,
that the church endured, and showed not only that God was in charge the whole time, but two things that were important. One, that when the church came out of those crises, it came out stronger than it was when it went in. Important reforms, important developments in church governance, in spiritual movements and other things arose because where sin abounded, grace abounded all the more.
Right.
And secondly, he shows that we can do something about it, even as laity. We can start with reforming our own hearts.
Yes.
And that's where all authentic church reform begins, not in some hall in Rome, but in our own daily conversion. But having done that, we have a basis for calling on our leaders to bring the church out of its dark times toward the, you know, God's light.
Yeah, I felt that reading it. I mean, everything from Arianism and investiture controversy, the Reformation, it's not just coincidental to the life of the church that she goes through these crises. That's what I came away from in the book. This is part of the life of the church, that she dies and rises in mm-hmm. a certain sense, mm-hmm. that she... And so I left it thinking, I don't really know what, 200 or 300, 500 years from now, the current crisis will resolve and make better in the world and in the church, but it's going to be magnificent, whatever mm-hmm. it is, because you can't look at the investiture controversy and what came out of that. And it seems so meaningless and pointless and petty when they're going through it, and they can't stop it, and it goes on for decade after decade.
Right.
But when it's over, the church is a shining new thing, and the world has new possibilities that it didn't have before.
And the investiture crises that the church has gone through are not quite the same thing, but they do echo in our own time in places like China.
Yeah.
Where the state has woven itself into the official church and is essentially dictating bishops to the church, and we're handling that in a crafty political fashion, but that's got to break, you know. That will break, and there will be a flashpoint for that crisis. And right. I firmly believe that we'll come out of it renewed again.
Yeah, and this whole, everybody knows we're in a time of crisis now. I mean, there's right. nobody who doesn't know it. We act like we're all divided as Catholics, and there is great division. But one thing unifies us all. We know this is not good, the situation that we're in. But that the Lord is doing, I felt that with reading Steve's thing, mm-hmm. piece. Mm-hmm. I just thought the normal person would write, well, we've come through these controversies before, but that's not what Steve wrote. Steve wrote, treat these crucibles as work of the Holy Spirit. The sin is not the work of the Holy Spirit, but the work of the Holy Spirit is that's the clay that he's working in, and something wonderful is coming, not just all the bad.
Right. And as a side benefit of that, Steve talks about what he calls the tyranny of the moment, and we've yes. excerpted that in the upcoming magazine. The fact that we get so involved and so concerned about our world that we think it's never been worse,
yeah.
and how are we going to recover? But when you get a historical perspective on things and see the cycles the church has been through and the crises the church has been through, and it's come out stronger, hopefully it gives us a little hope for the present
yeah.
moment.
It does. When I was thinking about reading about the Arian crisis, I'm starting to feel anxious as I'm reading about, like, how are we ever going to get through this? it's 1,500 right. years ago or more, but you feel like this is really bad. How are we going to get through this?
Yeah, Chesterton said Arianism was the biggest thing in the world,
yeah.
and then Christianity was bigger.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm mixing up my quotes. 50 lashes for me. It was paganism was the biggest thing in the world. He has some things to say about Arianism too, but what I was getting at was the scope of the Arian crisis.
It makes
the clown mass at your local parish just dwarfs it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we will. And so the Holy Spirit is doing something. It reminds me of the in season and out of season of St. Paul, well, we're out of season. That doesn't mean, right. But that doesn't mean we don't, it doesn't come back into season. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I hope you have a great relationship with Steve Weidenkopf, because he is not one of ours. He is not under our roof and not under, but man, is he producing great work.
And really. For the Catholic Answer School of Apologetics, he's teaching courses on church history that we also, that you also can get at our shop.
Well, don't let Tim Ryland make him mad or something. You know how Tim is.
I have to run interference sometimes, yeah.
Like, don't let him ruin a good thing we've got going. This guy doing great, great world history. All right, well, when we come back, we'll look at the survey a little bit. We'll look at some of what's gone on this year. I don't know if you know this, but we've got a synod on synodality. We've got a COVID crisis. We've got a whole bunch of other stuff. And you guys have 90 minutes to resolve it. So we'll come back with Tim Ryland, the head of the Catholic Answers magazine, and Todd Agliolaro, the head of publishing here at Catholic Answers, and me, the writer of a book. Hi, that doesn't sound quite as impressive, does it? All right, right back after this. Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. It's free, and you'll have instant access to our daily broadcast, the schedule of upcoming shows, and you'll even be able to search the archive and listen to thousands of past shows. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
This is Debbie Giorgiani.
And I'm Jerry Usher.
Join us for Take Two with Jerry and Debbie tomorrow at noon Eastern.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Oh, I just saw myself on the monitor. I really do look Christmassy. I'd look exactly like Santa Claus if he was wearing a green jacket.
I want to climb into your lap, Si, and I tell know. You that I want a pony.
It's too late. You have to wait another year. Unless you're one of those people who gives gifts on the Feast of the Epiphany, in which case there's still a chance for a pony.
It's still Christmas.
There's got to be a pony in here somewhere. You guys know that joke? No?
No.
Oh, you can't say it on the air. I said the punchline. I'll tell you at the break. There's got to be. And if anybody wants to know this joke, just type in, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere, and you'll get the joke on the internets. I think we praised the Steve Weidenkopf to the heavens there, but I think he deserved it. I think he's just doing great work. I'm so glad that we have an association with him. I think there's a certain kind of scholarliness that is not broken by the scholarly community, I guess. I don't know how else to put it, but you know, like we really are in trouble in the universities. And Steve teaches at a very, very fine university, but he's, I don't know.
He's understandable.
He's understandable, and he hasn't succumbed, I suppose, to academies.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially in history, the liberal arts and history are particularly polluted with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Okay, so we talked about all the books that we want to talk about. I mean, you really did do a great job this year. Well, the Early Church is a Catholic Church is the other one. That's the new one from Joe Heschmeyer, who is under our auspices.
And yes.
That was a get, wasn't it? That was a big... On St. Feast of St. Joseph this year, he became a member of the Catholic Answers family.
Yeah, Joe's book, in a nutshell, what makes that unique to me and uniquely useful is... We've done a lot with the Fathers and other like-minded organizations. The Fathers are a go-to resource for showing a historical continuity in Catholic doctrine and practice. But of course, a common Protestant rejoinder as well, after, and then pick your time, you know, early 3rd century, late 2nd, whatever, the falling away occurred.
Yeah.
And that, and so a lot of them pick, you know, Constantine
yeah.
But there's others. And so Joe goes back to the first 2 centuries. He goes back to an early Christian period to which most most anti-Catholic naysayers would point as the pure Christianity.
Right.
You know, maybe not reading their Bibles, but they're you know, there's the pastoring and there's small groups, and they imagine it as this kind of proto, you know,
Protestantism,
local Bible church.
Yeah, right.
And he says, okay, well, let's go there.
Yeah, let's go look and see what those people were
and
actually doing.
He looks at categories that relate to doctrine, worship, practice. He takes slices from all the main areas that make up a church and shows that unequivocally, even at those earliest dates, not only was the church, the early church Catholic in all of its beliefs and practices, but there was never any consideration that it would be otherwise.
No,
there were. Right. He refers to dogs that don't bark.
Yeah,
and the absence in the record of any forerunner of any, you know, proto reformer
yeah.
piping up and saying, no, we don't believe that Mary right. was the mother of God or something right. like that.
Oh, yeah.
They're just not there.
Or accusing the apostles of perverting the teaching of Christ or anything. It just doesn't happen. The early church, the two things that I like to say, and I think I've kind of gotten this from conversations with Joe now about it, is, okay, but so personally, I want to live the way the earliest church lived, the church that knew Jesus. Well, Jesus founded a hierarchical and sacramental church. So you're going to need to find a hierarchical and sacramental church. And people don't like to hear it. Like he couldn't have. I think he was spiritual and not religious, wasn't he? Like, I'm pretty sure that, no, he definitely chose a hierarchy. It's mm-hmm. in the scripture. You can't miss it. And he definitely created sacraments.
Spiritual but not religious was a category that that first century Jews would have been unfamiliar with for sure. that idea
That's
did
right.
not exist
right
under the law.
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it seems like, I think that's exactly right.
And it's funny, if you don't mind my looking ahead to a future book, well, as we kind of close
yeah,
the envelope
yeah.
on the publishing topic, but we're currently getting ready to publish or send to production a new book by Rod Bennett, who is another great author,
yes,
storyteller.
The Apostasy That Wasn't.
The Apostasy That Wasn't was the book he wrote for us, his book Four Witnesses for Ignatius Press, mm-hmm. and Four More Witnesses. It's a recently published sequel. And Rod has a gift for, as you do, Si, for putting gospel stories into a really relatable and understandable narrative form.
Yeah.
And this book is going to be called These 12, and it's about the apostles. And it's the Gospels through their eyes, but one thing that he establishes early on is that in certain Protestant circles, particularly the more intellectually honest academic ones, there is actually talk of admitting, well, we have to basically admit the possibility that the apostles got it wrong immediately. That even the
wow.
apostles
got it wrong.
Well, that.
But
that,
how else would
that,
you?
That the possibility existed. You had Christ, and then as soon as he handed off
yeah.
to the human agents, all bets were off. And that's kind of the logical terminus, in a sense, of the Protestant mentality, where you don't have divine protection over the faith, where you don't have a plan, as Rod outlines it, to work his mission through the men. The mission was the men,
yeah.
in essence. It's an apostolic faith, And that just doesn't mean, well, yeah, Jesus had some followers. It means the apostles were it.
Yes.
They were the front line.
That's why he worked so hard with them.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the way that Rod unpacks Christ's approach in working with his apostles, in different apostles in different ways, teaching them this but withholding this, affirming and then chastising, all the patterns that he used were those of a master teacher, as you know well.
Yeah.
So even though it's a narrative book about the gospel through the apostles' eyes, it really is an apologetic work as well, because it reminds us what apostolicity means, and it's not just a word.
Wonderful. And man, Rod Bennett's the guy to do it. When does that comes out in 2022 sometime? Or?
That'll be out in late winter, February 2022.
All right. All right. Well, I think we maybe should look at some of we'll do this over 2 days. We do this survey of our listeners, mm-hmm. and ask them everything from, as I said, who the Catholic person of the year is and the pro-life person of the year is, to the positive trends and the negative trends, Catholic word of the year, and some of what we'll kind of present tomorrow. Some of it we'll present today. So this makes our last 2 days of programming kind of fun to find out. I asked you to consider four categories. So just first impressions. Let me ask you this. Did you get a sense when you saw the responses to questions about the Catholic person of the year, questions about the negative trend, the positive trend, and questions about, because I gave you the answers to these, the Catholic media organization. What's the mood? Like after you looked at the responses, your general sum up of the Catholic mood?
Surly.
Okay, tell me about that. What?
Good word.
Well, we're so many of us, according to the survey anyway, are quite concerned about the things of the world and of the church. I mean, from COVID to Eucharistic disbelief.
Yeah.
Those are threads that seem to pop up throughout. And yet, when you go to the personality of the year, I saw a lot of positivity. I mean, people responding to
very positive people.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting dichotomy.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. What did you think? Would you agree that the mood seems surly among us Catholics?
Well, like I said, that's a great word, and for sure, that sentiment is present in not just in the topics and but in the way they were worded. Mm-hmm. But it's a weird mix, Si. It's surliness with a kind of defiant hope as well, mm-hmm. and which I think is kind of a very Catholic thing, isn't it? We're kind of up against the world always, but without losing the sight of the light at the end of the tunnel. So I got both of that. There was an underlying optimism and a kind of grim. Grasping
bad.
On through the tornado kind of thing.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, well, we want to do a positive and negative trends. We'll talk about those too.
Yeah.
And we'll get your take on those, which ones struck you, which ones didn't, and then we'll see which was the actual positive trend and negative trend of the year as selected by our listeners.
Wow, I can't wait.
See, there you go. That's what I was looking for. A little bit of this is like we're going to drop the ball at Times Square. We're going to do the positive trend and negative trend of the year.
Awesome.
Thank you. We have the guy from Deloitte & Touche coming out with the box, right?
And we forgot that guy. Oh. Okay, but now I have to take a break. Now that we've ginned up all of this enthusiasm. And then
I don't see how we could possibly pay that off sufficiently. So we'll do our best.
All right, right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples, disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, Saturday at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. We have surveyed our listeners for a whole bunch of end of year topics. Asked for response on 11 different questions. We're going to cover four of them in different ways today with our guest Tim Ryland, the publisher of the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, and Todd Agliolaro, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers. And we'll start with negative trends. I think we'll start negative so that we can move positive. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah. Let me just start with, was there one that stood out to you that people said? We leave it completely open. We don't give a variety of answers. We just say, what was the negative trend of 2021? What stood out to you?
The COVID pandemic stood out to me.
Because so many people said it?
Several people said it, and also there's just different manifestations, whether it's frustration with having to put a mask on in a grocery store, or whether it's frustration with the inability to worship in a church,
yeah,
building.
Yeah.
I think it affected us all.
One person, their COVID comment was continued discovery of new COVID variants.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, it seemed to me that they're not opposing the scientific discovery of new variants, just the idea that every time there's a new variant, it seemed to me, I mean, I'm interpreting there, but.
No, I took it the same way.
What they're saying is, come on, we're never going to just.
Right.
You know, buck up. We're going to say another emergency every time. And I think that breathless sense of emergency, people are tired of it.
Well, I read an article just yesterday from a woman, a female doctor in South Africa, who claims she was the first one to raise the flag about this new variant. And she said that she's been, you know, on the front lines for 33 years. She went through all her bona fides. And she said, I was stunned by the global overreaction, people shutting back down. She says, this is the mildest variant that we've identified yet.
Right.
I've never talked to anybody. It was like a bad cold for 4 or 5 days. But she said, there's the overreaction. She says, as a doctor, I'm mortified by it. I'm stunned by it. And I think that's what's happening. We're just making every single day or change in what we know about this pandemic something to shut down the world for.
Tim said that it manifests itself in a number of ways, and it's true even in these comments, and there were some that specifically called out the church's reaction.
Yes, without question.
To the mandates and to the lockdowns. And here in the United States, we've had it relatively good. I mean, there are some dioceses that have been more stringent than others. But in other countries, there are dioceses where they're checking your vaccine card at the door of the church. In essence, denying the sacraments to people.
Vaccine card and ID in parts of Canada.
In Canada.
Like you got to show up with picture ID, which I was told you're not supposed to do that anymore.
Now that's not to downplay a hypothetical circumstance in which a public health emergency is so dire that the church would need to act responsibly.
Right, and that's why we struggle on air, and I wonder what you think about this, to answer. Like, people say, you can never do this. And the answer is, no, there are situations where complete lockdowns and closing churches and all actually are appropriate. You know,
yes.
If the Black Death comes back again, believe me, you're going to want them to close everything down because it's the Black Death. But the problem is, this is not the Black Death. And I feel like we're using the howitzer in a situation, you know, in a knife fight.
Yes, and that's a prudential point. And of course, you're debating relative levels of tolerance for risk and all that sort of thing, for which there's no objective answer. But we can be reasonable with each other, and particularly with regard to this Omicron variant, which is looking more and more to be a tempest in a teapot sort of thing, where we don't have to take a kind of calloused individual approach. Well, this is the Wild West. If you die, you die. It's not that grave.
There is a media of some kind. What is it? The golden mean, I suppose. So there's some middle way here that, because 800,000 people dying in the United States over the course of 18 months, and I know many people say, well, a lot of them didn't die of COVID. I'm sure that will all be litigated in time. But let's say half of those were fake. Still, 400,000 people. This is a very serious virus. I am not. And I know this, it's hard to even talk about it because people get so mad at you because you say the thing that they are convinced is not true. But I do think it's a very serious virus. You know, if this were a flu, we'd go, this is the worst flu since 1917. I mean, it's bad. It's worse than the Hong Kong flu, which was called the Hong Kong flu, by the way. I mean, no one thought that was racist in 1968 or 69. But the...
Well, they held Woodstock during the middle of the Hong Kong flu, by the way, and that didn't look very sanitary to me. So,
no, but
seemed to have survived.
I don't think they all died. But no, your point's well taken, Si. And of course, that's just viewing it from a prudential public health point. When you view it from the perspective which we really ought to, at least as regards the churches, which is the spiritual good of the sacraments, the necessity of the Eucharist, the necessity of confession. That lifeblood to our souls, which is more important than the body, and in places where there seems to be an imprudent, excessive caution regarding the health of the body over the health of the soul, that's where I think the disappointment of some of our respondents is located.
Yeah, that's very, very well good said. Point. I think that's very, very well said, and. I suppose we're going to get through this, but it's at some point, and God forbid that a variant should arise that is, you know, really it's magnitude worse, you know, because we've already really beaten each other up horribly over this, and we're so scarred. I don't think we would respond reasonably, but I'll throw this out there and see what you all think. But I do have even a priest that I went to Mass one time was preaching on believing the science, you know? And believing the science tends to go one direction and not the other. Because in my view, okay, I wanted to say, Father, I believe the science. I do think this is a very serious virus, but it's not a threat to children. Like the science is, this is a disease that does not kill children. I'm not saying it will never kill a child, but out of the 2 billion children on the planet Earth, it probably only has the potential to kill a fraction of 1% of them. So it's safer than putting your kid in a car. And that's science. I'm not lying about the virus. Sure. I'm not minimizing. That's the science. So when I see little children in their little masks, clearly suffering, and everyone can deny that that's suffering, but 4-year-olds are suffering if you're making them wear masks for several months. I think we'll believe
the science. And
making
them watch other people in masks.
Yeah.
And I think it will be decades maybe before we realize the full effects of that kind of socialization in schools.
But I don't know what if you would comment for me on the like as a Catholic I believe Father Jockey's premise that science was born of Christianity. I believe in believing science. But why do I have to believe the science that this is a very serious vaccine that puts people in the hospital, that very dangerous, but that it's not dangerous for children and stop treating children like it is? It's not dangerous for them. Why can't I believe all of the science? Why I got to believe half the science?
Yeah, well said.
Well, you gave a statistic of, you know, childhood mortality rates of well under 1%. That goes globally for this pandemic, Si.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, less than a percentage of the population of the world has succumbed to this, according to official records. So never downplaying the severity of it or the tragedy of deaths. When you look at the big picture, it's like, was this worth ruining the global economy for?
Global economy, people's mental health, people's physical health.
Spiritual health.
Mm. I think it was worth it because... the guys who own Amazon and SpaceX got way richer. They got way there again. And I feel like, well, that's a good. Yeah. We should admit some of the goods that came out of this.
Yes, of course.
Having more money, better than having less money.
My pharma stocks are doing great.
Your pharma stocks, I imagine so. We're going to get through it. I think it's related, however, to another thing that I saw as a negative trend, And but I think these things are related. Is people would say a growing distrust of one another, growing distrust.
Catholics
of,
versus Catholics. You stole my segue. Si.
Okay, go ahead. Please.
No, that's great. I'm glad we're two minds with but a single thought. You
spy
and I.
Spy versus spy.
Yeah. But elaborate, will you? What did you think of
that? Well,
that was
an expression that one of your respondents used. Then what was the negative for 2200? Catholics versus Catholics.
Yeah.
The social media flame war is over COVID. Is just one example, or just one example. I followed a thread that I made kind of an innocent comment on, where a Catholic cleric accused those who are speaking in the way that we are speaking now of causing innocent people's deaths. So if we use
that's
a phrase
horrible
like
accusation,
I agree.
That's mean and horrible.
And it's an example of the way at which those who should be friends and allies, certainly those in the same faith, but all people of goodwill, all people of any faith, we ought to be finding common cause against larger enemies, the culture of death, secularization, all of those things. And instead, we're tearing each other to pieces, not just over COVID, over liturgy wars, over your particular kind of spirituality versus mine.
Over Pope Francis?
Certainly, Francis is a flashpoint for that, too.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have a remedy for that? I mean, or is it just, we have to note that's part of our Catholic life now is really
remedy number one is getting off of Twitter.
Yeah.
Honest to goodness, unless you're using it professionally. And of course, our social media folks here probably won't want me here to say that because we have a Twitter page. So the medium is not evil in itself. Television's not evil. Movie's not evil. Twitter is not evil. But we've all gone into that jungle, and we see how people behind that what do they call that? The glass.
The partition, maybe, or
yeah. there's an expression that someone coined very cleverly to express the kind of bravado that we all get when we're sitting in front of our computer screens and we say things to people we'd never say them in person.
And we know we shouldn't say. You shouldn't talk to somebody that way.
No one knows you're a dog on the internet. Have you ever seen that famous New Yorker cartoon?
Yes. It's a great New Yorker
dog,
cartoon.
Right.
Yeah. And obviously you're a bad Catholic because you just referenced the New Yorker. This is one of those cultural markers that you can't, you know, we judge each other so quickly.
It was the old New Yorker, though.
It was the good New Yorker. I was into the New Yorker
it's
before.
Early stuff.
Right.
Before they
really
sold out.
Bad.
That commercial.
I don't know how much I do want to talk about negative trends a little more because there are some that are also really important to talk about. Most particularly, it seems like, I don't know how to bundle all these up, but they do seem all connected to me. Several people mentioned wokeism. Mm. They mentioned transgender ideology. And used a few other terms that I don't know what the catch-all term for that is. Maybe political correctness would have been what we would have said at one point. But
you're dating yourself, Si.
That's not in vogue anymore. And I will quote In Vogue. That was that's a great band.
Further dating yourself, Si.
Now I started thinking about In Vogue, and now I forgot where I was going. So.
Wokeism.
Okay, so the I don't want to, you know, I guess wokeism has become the catch-all term in a certain way.
Yes.
But I see a problem with that. I think when most people use the wokeism stuff, they're talking about the transgender stuff, the language police and all of that. They're not actually talking about the racial issues that were the beginning of the word woke. I don't think that people are... As a matter of fact, I think most people would like to not be talking about race when they're talking about that. They're talking about a kind of mind control.
I'm not sure
control.
About its origins. No. Were they entirely racial? I mean, woke, the word, of course, has a kind of Gnostic sense to it. It's kind of, you know, which pillar are you going to swallow, right? So you're emerging from your slumber in which you believe what your parents taught you or accept tradition
it's
or whatever.
It's the exact same thing the other side says red pilled on, or is it blue pill? I don't know which pill.
It's one of those pills.
But you red. You know, it's supposed to be like, okay, I see the light now. And there is this kind of narcissism.
And it's very narcissistic, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, but there also is a point, well, we got to take a break. All right, we'll continue with, and we'll name the negative trend of the year. we'll reveal it, and then we'll do some more of what our listeners thought of the year 2021, and we'll get the response of our very fine guest, Tim Ryland, the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, Todd Agliolaro, the director of publishing, and me, your faithful host. And I'm nothing if not faithful. Ask my dog. Cy Kellett, right after this. We'll be back. More Catholic Answers Live.